heard.
Yeah. That's when I'm...
Don't be sorry.
You're that's when that. I'm... Okay. Okay. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, January 10th, 2012. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, your timing, that was pretty good. Okay, the approval of the minutes of 1-03-12.
Move approval. Second.
Been moved and second. The approval of the minutes. Are there any changes or comments regarding the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are approved. Public comment number one. This is comments from the audience on topics on today's agenda. Is there anyone that want to address the board regarding today's agenda? Seeing no one, we'll move on down. There's no public hearings, no additional items. We're honored today to have agency report from Veterans Affairs, Brett McLean. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Right, I'll start off here, just kind of something I added to my report here this morning. Been working with Matt Emerson on a social media, some wording there, and just to give the board a little background of where the Veterans Affairs Department's at on that, the federal department. The VA's, their mission is to get the right information to the right veteran at the right time. Millions of veterans and their family members use social media each day, so they're looking to expand their efforts in those areas. On record, there's 152 VA medical centers in the United States that are on Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, YouTube, and blogs, along with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Health Administration, Veterans Benefit Administration, and the National Cemetery Administration. So I just want to give the board that information. And I'm not quite sure what Flickr is, but they're on it. Now for my report, I want to mention our chairman for this year is Chad Cook, is the chair for the commission. And Harlan Borton and Jennifer Rabine are our members. During our second quarter, we actually seen 202 veterans, seven that were qualified for county benefits. We had one family that came in for burial assistance, and that was $1,700. We had five that came in that were qualified. We had several that weren't, but five that came in for rent assistance, and that was $1,785. And we had one came in for dental assistance, which was $53. Total dollars expended for the county for the quarter was $3,538. And looking at the quarter, the errors of veterans that we've seen 61 that were World War II veterans, 34 Korea veterans, 35 Vietnam, 23 Persian Gulf, 36 that were OIF, which is Operation Iraqi Freedom, OEF Afghanistan, and OND, which is Operation New Dawn. They've changed the name of OIF to OND, just for your information. So anybody serving in Iraq since September 1st, 2010, they fall under Operation New Dawn. So we basically have put all three of those categories in the same group. And then Cold War or peacetime, we've seen 13. We've seen seven that were homeless, and I visited one in jail. And for the board's information, when we get a call of a veteran that wants me to come over there, the law says I have 72 hours to to go over there and see the individual. So we've been doing that. So for a total of 202 for the quarter. A little update from the VA regional office. VA and Housing and Urban Development recently released a national report that shows veterans homeless fell nearly 12% during January 2010 and January 2011. The 12% decline keeps VA on track to meet their goal of ending homelessness by 2015. According to the 2011 Supplement on Annual Homelessness Assessment Report that was released, 67,495 veterans were homeless in the United States on a single night in January of 2011, a significant reduction from last year. Single night count was 76,329. So the difference there was 8,834 that were able to bring in off the street, teach them some job skills, get them out in the work field, get them into shelters and other homes like that. For our outreach effort, October 4th, the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs held their fall school, which I attended, and also Luke Jensen. October 18th was the VA's the state VA's commission school, which was held in Carroll, and Jennifer Rabine attended that. October 19th, we did a COI over in Boone, which was the helicopter flight. We had 9 media were present, and 32 businesses were represented from Story and Boone County. October 28th.
As well as one supervisor.
As well as one county supervisor. October 28th, the commission took a tour of the Iowa Veterans Home, kind of got ourselves up to date on all the changes that are happening over there. And on the 31st, we finished up our newsletter that was 3,700 were sent out. November 18th, the commission hosted our annual Supermarket of Veterans Benefits. We served 51 veterans that day. It was at the Moose Lodge. Some of the agencies that came up to help, we had 15. The Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs, the Iowa Veterans Home, Story County Assessor's Office, Iowa Works, Manpower, DAV, Disabled American Veterans, American Legion, Order of the Purple Heart, the Vet Center from Des Moines, the VA Medical Center from Des Moines, Women's Program Manager from the VA Hospital, My Healthy Vet from the VA Hospital, Social Security Administration, and the Story County Dental Clinic and Voc Rehab. Veterans in attendance, we had 51. We had 11 from World War II, 22 for Korea, 6 from Vietnam, 2 peacetime, 2 Persian Gulf, and 2 OEF. We were able to enroll 20 in the VA healthcare system and also filed 24 claims for possibilities for service-connected disabilities. Donations were done by Hy-Vee and the Dutch Oven, Women's of the Moose, and the Moose Lodge donated our meeting room in the back. Didn't cost the county a whole lot of money. A little bit of just advertising is all it cost us. Did some outreach programs. We had been requested to do presentations at the American Legion in Nevada. That was held December 12th. We did Roland, which was January 5th. Some of the things that we're working on for Veterans Affairs is took a look at the Vietnam veterans. And there's so many of them that when they returned home, they didn't join any service organizations. You know, VFW, American Legion. Looking at, we have, that I know of, we have 452 on record Vietnam veterans in this county. And if I can get 25 that are interested, we can start a Vietnam Veterans of America chapter in this county. So we're working on that to see if we could maybe get that started for those folks. Their dues would be $20 a year, and they would get a newsletter from VVA every couple of months just to keep them in the loop, because if they're not a member of any service organization, a lot of times they get kind of left out of what's going on, what new benefits might be for them. And the Vietnam veterans, there's 15 presumptive diagnoses for Agent Orange. So there's probably several of the 452, and I don't even know if that's not all of them. That's just the ones that we know about. So we're trying to get that off the ground. And then we also have an idea to maybe do an honor flight for World War II, Korea, and Vietnam veterans, kind of in that order, in this year or next. So we're getting a committee together on the 27th to kind of take a look at the blueprint, basically. I got one guy from Winnebago that's coming down. He's done 7. And then we have a Mr. Baker from Jasper County who actually headed up the one that Jasper did. We're going to take a look at exactly, all the pieces. There's a lot of pieces in this puzzle, you know, to put on an honor flight. And it's a big event to take 80 and 90-year-olds on a field trip for a day to Washington, D.C. So we're going to kind of explore that, if you will, and then kind of go from there to see kind of funds that we need to raise. Probably everybody on the committee will be in fundraising. I believe the last time that I looked up for a flight for 100 plus 35 escorts is around 58,000 from Des Moines to Washington, D.C. And then there's so much time that they have to be on the ground before coming back. So with that, it makes it a long day for them. But you know, the ones that I've talked to that's gone to Washington, D.C. on the honor flight, nobody's complained about the long day. So, all right. So that's all that I have for the board. Anybody have anything for
just
me?
Just a question. Can you comment on where we are with the furniture bank, or will that still be continued? I know there was some question earlier with the bank bugs and not being able to take furniture that had, cloth and mattresses and things of that nature. But are we still providing other furniture needs for our veterans? And used to do this a certain day a month, but I don't know where are we at with that.
Well, going back, I've done this for 13 years. So, going back, there was a time that we spent 2 full days a month going out and picking up furniture. We had an 8-car garage as high as you can stack it. Okay, so we've gone from that to the only thing that we can get now is things that are 100% wood. End tables, coffee tables, kitchen tables. Anything that's upholstered, we can't take that because of the bed bug issue. And as long as we have international travel, the way I understand it, we are going to have a bed bug issue. We don't want to give anything out that may be a liability on the county in that regard. So, in essence, we're not picking up a whole lot of things right now because of what we can get. And it seems to be that the things that we can get aren't the things that people are needed, kind of a vicious circle like that. So it's really tapered down. And for VA, kind of what Luke and I have been doing is that we're on the donation side of the house. So people call in, they have a donation, we write them down. When we get a few, then we'll go out and pick them up. So now we're at maybe once a quarter, maybe a half a day or less, just because of that. And, of course, we have the option, if they don't want to wait, they can, of course, bring those items in. So that's kind of all that I know about it. It has dwindled down, and we have 2 storage units, which probably don't need that much right now.
All right.
We're getting, yeah.
Good. Well, thank you. That's the only question that I had.
And I have had a conversation with Deb Shildroth, and I think she might be exploring the idea of having some nonprofit organizations maybe take that on.
Okay.
I think she's mentioned that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And we will see you this afternoon, I guess, for your budget session. Good. It's an exciting time, huh?
Right.
Okay, thank you. All right, then moving on to departmental reports, we have the engineer, Darren Moon.
Morning.
Morning.
Well, I've got to start with the weather.
Hey, thank goodness.
I felt like we were due for an easier winter, and boy, I think we got one so far. The biggest budget impact that has to us is probably our salt line item. We do contract each year for 800 tons of salt. We usually use more than that, but we want to guarantee we have that available to us. I don't know. It's been a long time if ever we've ever underrun that. So I don't know if they'll allow us to not take the entire 800 tons in each year. So we might be contracted to at least get that. And we might have to find a room to put it somewhere because our salt shed's almost full right now. But by the end of the year, it might not be a problem. But we're going to talk to them to see if we can underrun that as a possibility. But we have a $100,000 line item for salt and sand. And that 800 tons is $52,000. Right off the top, so hope to at least see that savings of $50,000 in the salt budget. Should also see some savings in our equipment operations. That includes fuel, blades, equipment repairs. The fuel item itself, we're already over in that, so the efficiencies here might just bring us back to a break-even level there with the fuel. Also talk in the news recently, it happens every year, that fuel prices are expected to go up again, so concerned about that. We should also see some savings in our overtime budget, but most of that will be reflected in our comp time balances. But the good news there is we're going to have more of a full crew in the summer to do more work, where a lot of people are on vacations at that point, so be able to get more done in the summer. The mild weather also results in much less stress and damage to our pavements, and you'll feel that when you're driving the pavements. You're not getting the bumps right now, and that's really reflected in the spring with the amount of patching we have to do, so that really helps too. The only downside I can really think of to the nice weather is that we have to spend a little bit more additional time on the gravels right now blading because they haven't froze up yet, so and that's fuel costs and everything that goes into keeping those maintainers running. The weather's also allowed us to get some additional brush clearing done, which has been needed. We haven't had a chance to do that much the past few years, and we've also done some bridge deck repairs. Moving on to Agland Energy is a wind turbine company that's putting up three sites right now. I think it's owned by Dale Swanson, so it's a local person putting those up, but they're the good-sized wind turbines. The first one they did, unfortunately, the big component pieces came in the day after we had that last rain. That was about a month ago. So it did some pretty good damage to a stretch of our gravel road up there in Warren Township. So they will be billed for some of the rock and work we had to do on that road as a condition of our conditional use permit with them. But the other two sites up north of Ziering and then another one down by Collins, those components have been brought in without much damage there. They came in the morning when the roads were still froze up, so we didn't get much damage out of those. And they did on the Warren site. They had a bad truck operator that dumped one of the main base pieces. The back went in the ditch, and the front was sticking all the way across our road, so that we had to go out and close the road overnight. And they were able to get it out in the morning, but that was some additional cost to us. E18 bridge letting. This is the bridge up south of Story City where we had the 8-ton posting. That was let a couple weeks ago through the DOT. Our estimate was $221,000 for that replacement. Low bid came in at $196,000, and the high bid was $282,000. So we're happy with the prices there. And that will have an April late start date, so they need to be in here by the end of April to get started on that, so that will happen this spring. And we got that project designed and let in record time for a federal aid project. So, Nevada 2080 agreement, working with Nevada on agreement for paving some, they're going to pave some portions that are still county roads, so we need to have an agreement to do that. This is for 590th north of Lincoln Way, up to the new ethanol plant expansion. And the other issue is they're building turn lanes on Lincoln Highway like they did on 600th. They're going to do that down at 590th, and once you get past 590, that's all county, so that's going to affect some of the county road too. I put together the draft agreement, and Steve Owens already reviewed that. He has no issues with it. One of the other reasons for this agreement and the kind of the push to get it done is the city's applying for some RISE funds to get both these projects done. So they need something in writing showing the county's going to allow them to do that on our county roads. But at this point, there's no cost to the county for these improvements other than some future maintenance items. Bob Johnson's also working on some language for a hearing to use some of our remaining bond funds to pave McFarland Park Road, do an overlay on that road. So as soon as he gets me that language, we can get the hearing set up and get a letting scheduled to get that done before July 1st. Winter project design. Winter's when we do our internal project designs. We're working on a number of the paving jobs. We have five paving jobs we're working on. We've already completed the plans for Fernald Stub and then McFarland Park we just talked about. And those two projects we want to get completed by July 1st. There's three other projects, paving-wise, Shipley Road. That's Farm to Market funded project. We're hoping to get done yet this summer. And then 590th Vetter, funded with the TIF money. And hopefully have construction done on that by this fall. And the last one we're working on is North Dakota. There's a stretch up there that needs to be reconstructed. And we're working on the plans, but we probably won't. That probably won't have construction until next construction season because we need to get a lot of right of way and stuff purchased this year. There's also four culvert projects we're designing in house that we hope to have a local April letting for that. So those will be constructed this fall. Shingles for our salt shed. We're getting some quotes to re-shingle our salt shed. When that was done, there's some organic style shingles they put on that, and they've just completely curled up to the point where something needs to be done pretty quick on that. We have some building repairs money we're going to put towards the sign shed, but I think we're going to have to delay that to get this done first. It's higher priority for us. First estimate was around $12,000. So it's a pretty good size roof we have on that. So you should see that quote come through the board agenda in the next couple of weeks for approval. That is a budgeted item.
Any thought to a metal roof on that shed?
No. Cost-wise, I think probably just go with the shingles, and they should last long. They also use black shingles, which also deteriorate faster. So if we go with a longer life shingle and a different color, it should last quite a long time. Cross traffic does not stop signs. We have those signs already installed at the intersection of S-14 and E-29. We also looked at, while we're adding them there, other intersections in the county that were similar to that. And really the only one we have that's a four-way paved county-only intersection is Lincoln Highway and 580th. So we are going to add those to that intersection, too, for the north and southbound of 580th, because there is a pretty high accident count on that intersection, too. So we're going to add them there, and we're going to update the ones at 13th Street. In 580, those are the existing ones, but there's been a change in the standard. They're no longer white. They're yellow signs now, so we need to bring those up to current standards. So we'll have three intersections all said and done with those new cross-traffic signs.
Thank you for getting that done.
Another sign issue, we're in a bit of a battle with the railroad right now, the countywide. They're requesting stop signs put up at every crossing in the county. In the past, the crossbucks have meant yield. I guess the railroad feels like they're getting ignored. Over time, people ignore those. So they've had this push for a long time to try to get stop or yield signs put up at those intersections, and the counties have kind of resisted. And the other part is we feel it's the railroad's responsibility to put those signs up at the railroad itself. The county's always been responsible for the railroad ahead signs, so we've always maintained those. And there's kind of some conflict now. The new national sign manual has added that those stop and yield signs can be put under the crossbucks where it really hadn't been in there in the past, so the railroad's on a big push to get them put in. So we're kind of talking statewide on how we want to address that. And the Iowa code also says that the railroad is responsible for the sign at the actual railroad inside their right-of-way, and we really don't want to be in the railroad right-of-way ever putting signs up or anything anyway. So we'll see how that turns out, but that's 23 crossings we'd have, so we're talking at least 46 signs, and if we got to do a advance warning sign to that, it'd be additional double that number, so it's a considerable amount of signs and costs there.
How often do we have a train vehicle accident in Story County?
It's fairly rare. We had one south of McCallsburg a number of years ago where I think that was alcohol involved, and the person just ran into a moving train, just didn't see it. And they've already just recently installed the gate arms on that road, a very low traffic count. I think they had some special money from the stimulus to get some of those additional ones done. So we've got the ones where we do have accidents, most of them have had the gate arms put up on them. So in those cases, these stop signs wouldn't be applicable anyway. So
how many of our 23 crossings don't have gate arms at this point?
I think the 23 are the ones that don't.
All the UP, Union Pacific, all the grade crossings have the mechanical.
Okay. Talking, I think, mostly on the north-south lines are the ones
south line that, doesn't.
That don't have them. Yeah.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes, but it's kind of been an ongoing thing for a long time. It's popping up again. Start a legislative session. There's still a chance for a fuel tax increase. I just wanted to bring you up to speed on the latest. There's bipartisan legislation proposed already that the main points of that would be an increase in the gas tax 4 cents in 2013 and an additional 4 cents in 2014. Also a 1 cent increase in the fee for new vehicle registration. That would go from 5% to 6%. And then apply a fee to annual registrations for hybrids and alternatively fueled vehicles. And then again, they want to make sure we're identifying our efficiencies with the state and the cities. And we did have our first meeting with the state on trying to find some of those efficiencies. And there's really four main points that came out of that meeting. One, we're exploring the option of swapping local funds for federal aid funds, so the county would be getting local dollars instead of federal dollars, and that helps the DOT with project oversight. And we started that process this year before all this came out anyway, so that this kind of just became part of the efficiencies that we can look at getting. So we highly recommend that. Look for ways to share and coordinate road maintenance. We expect to have that meeting with the DOT before too long. I'm looking for ways we can do that in Story County. Work with the DNR and other regulators to improve the permitting processes that slow us down. And then the new DOT director is pretty big on asset management, so he wants to look into that. I think that's a little bit more applicable for DOT than counties. We have a little bit smaller system that we keep better track on. I want a reminder of the DOT Highway 30 Corridor Study from Ames to Nevada meeting. That's Thursday evening from 5 to 7 at the Baptist Church. Really, the main thing is we're just looking for public input there on possible intersection locations or interchange locations between here and Nevada. And that also includes discussion on the S-14 interchange in Nevada and some work to I-35 bridge.
You send me a reminder on that, too. You're going to go, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So one of us will try to be there. I'm just trying to remember what, yeah. Okay. Try to have one supervisor there at least.
We do have a current job opening. Applications are due by January 20th. That's next Friday for entry-level equipment operator one position. That was opened up, and we promoted Chris Erickson to a motor grader job. That was opened up through retirement. So Chris Erickson will be taking over the motor grader job up in the Zeering area. And lastly, CERCLA this Thursday. Wayne, you have budget meetings, I know, so you won't be able to go. But a couple items that will be discussed there is the support for the Nevada RISE grant application that I already talked about earlier. And then it should be awarded the TE funds for the Country Club bike trail. And the amount right now that we'd be funded would be $127,231. And our total cost for that project was $446,000. So There's still about $320,000 left there. Just a quick question to clarify for me. The board supported $100,000 for funding. Was that the enhancement funds, or do you plan on supporting an additional $100,000 of local dollars? Do you know the intention of that?
I think it's out of the TIF funds.
Yeah,
is where we intended.
So that would be added on to this 127th grant money. So that would be an additional. Okay, I wasn't real clear.
Yeah, I think it's the grant money plus $100,000 in TIF funds, and then the remainder of the project is supposed to come through donations of the people that live out there and things like that.
Okay. And so, yeah, like say we can accept this grant because there wasn't any competition, so it's not like we're taking money from somebody else if this doesn't follow. We don't follow through and actually do the project, so there's no harm down there by taking it at this point. That's all I have. Any questions?
Just a question. Keep us tuned with discussions regarding State Avenue and with the City of Ames and how that is progressing. I know every so often I run into one or two residents out there, and they're just wondering, you know, where that project is going. So,
sure. And there's some NPO meetings scheduled. I can't remember exactly when they are, but I'll ask those questions then.
Okay. And then have you kind of thought about when you want to visit with the board again regarding the five-year plan and any revisions or modifications to that yet? We usually do that in the spring.
Usually late March time frame. We may want to do it a little sooner. We usually push it towards the April 15th deadline, so we could probably do that mid-March time frame.
All right, good. Okay, that's all I have. Do you have anything, Rick?
Two real quick things. One, we're having a conversation about staffing in a more permanent way the entrance downstairs to this building and making that kind of a hub for applications and permits and, you know, things that relate to planning and development. And sure. Would like that to also include anything that runs through your office where people could come in and not have to navigate, you know, the maze that is Story County sometimes in order to get that done. So keep that in your mind. And, Wayne, I didn't know if this was the appropriate time. I know that you got some correspondence from Gilbert.
You can. Yeah, we can.
I was just going to turn it back to you and say this may be the right time just to, as we continue to talk about 5:30th
right.
Runs out of there.
Yeah, and I shared that with Darren this morning. And basically, we had just received a letter from the Gilbert Community School District encouraging us again to consider what we can do to speed up the process of paving 530th to Harrison Road, which is directly linked to the new school that is going to go in there. And again, I know that this is again areas where dollars may have to come from the TIF revenues that are coming there, but again, if we work with them and find out is there a way that part of that project may be addressed in a different manner, it may become a very important area. And then the key oftentimes is do you pave something prior to or after they've already started with the schools? You know, those are the type of decisions that's kind of always interesting, but we know that that traffic is going to obviously pick up quite a bit. And I think they're also interested in some type of bike lanes, bike trails along that area, too. So I think how we as a county and other interested parties engage in that, I think, is worthy of a topic and continual discussion. So I just want to keep that on the radar. Okay.
Cool.
And then I will just submit this letter that we received and add it to the files, Shelley, for just notification and consideration. Okay?
Thank you. And I'm going to send an email to our individual that was inquiring about the driveway.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Explain the use of. We do have some plastic pipes for temporary situations out there.
Yep.
They're needed.
I'll respond to him today.
Okay. All right. Moving on then, is liaison assignments, anything?
Just a reminder that we've got Government Structuring Committee meeting tonight in Collins at 7 o'clock. My intent is to attend that and hear what's said at the first of I want to say there's a half dozen, Leanne, a half dozen public meetings over the next two and a half, three weeks. Okay. Stay tuned
great.
To that.
Great. Okay, great. All right. Moving on to the next item is I have nothing on liaison, first of all. Well, I guess I should say yes, I did. I met with Deb Shilroth, basically, and the primary discussion was just to talk about the report from the asset funding request, which we'll hear about tomorrow during the budget work sessions that Heartland Senior Services has asked for some change in how we fund transportation and the foods program, which is very problematic at this point in time. And so Deb did communicate back with the director regarding how the transportation portion of those dollars are. So we're still going to need to address that, and that's a cooperative effort between the City of Ames, United Way, and Story County as far as Heartland Senior Services needs as they move forward. So that's about it. Okay, personnel actions. I think all items there is good to go.
Move approval. Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the personnel action. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel action is approved. Gentlemen, on the consent agenda, I would like to pull items 6 and 7 for just a update discussion, and then we need to amend some wording in item 6. And I'd like to say item 10, there is no secondary road closure, and there is, no utility permits, item 10, and there is one secondary road closure. So I'd entertain a motion to deal with the other consent agendas with the exceptions of item 6 and 7 for later consideration.
I'll move approval of the consent agenda with the noted changes.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Item number 6 is consider the approval of the appointment of the Conservation Board. We had 4 candidates that expressed an interest, all highly qualified, the board recommended the approval of Sandy Opstreet from Story City and Alan Weber to a 5-year term ending 12/31/16. Last night at the Conservation Board meeting, the board brought to my attention that one of these positions is filling an unexpired term of Aaron Wilgenbusch, which is 12/31/12. And so my recommendation would be to amend Sandy Opstreet's to the unexpired term, filling the unexpired term ending in 12/31/12, and then Alan Weber for the 5-year term ending 12/31/16. Now, when we visited with Sandy, she was aware that she would be eligible to be reappointed at the end of 2012 for a 5-year term. But to make it correct, I think we need to note that there is an unexpired position that is being filled for next year. So I would just suggest that we do that. And then in the second item, 7, I will cover at the same time. I thought it was important last night that the Conservation Board actually take action before the Board of Supervisors finally move to recognize me as a non-voting member, because the bylaws for the Conservation Board basically only requires a 5-member board, and last night they voted unanimously to approve accepting me as an ex officio member or future years a board member if we so designate in that capacity as a non-voting member. But I thought it was important that the Conservation Board, which is an autonomous board, be in a position to say whether they wanted that position or not want that position. And they were very favorable of that and expressed a wholehearted desire to continue to have a positive working relationship with the Board of Supervisors. So just wanted to mention that those two actions were taken.
So then I'll move Sandy Upstreet to fill the unexpired term ending 12/31/12. I'll move Alan Weber to fill the five-year term ending 12/31/16. And I'll move Wayne Clinton as an ex officio member for a term ending 12/31/16.
I'll second those.
It's been moved and second that Sandy Upstreet fill the unexpired term ending 12/31/12 and Alan Weber the five-year term, and that I would serve as the non-voting ex-official member of the Conservation Board for a five-year term. Roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. 6 and 7 is approved. And thank you, gentlemen, for that. And I think things will work out extremely well. I was very pleased with the two new appointees. Okay, item 12, none, other reports, none, public comment, 2, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to speak? Okay, we've already talked about the correspondence letter from announcements from the supervisors. I was going to mention that, but that's already been taken care of. So, Mr. Toot, do you have anything?
Just a little disappointed in the LSU-Alabama game last night, kind of a yawner.
Roll Tide.
I had a hard time staying awake, too.
If you like good defense, it was a good game, man.
Okay. Anything, Rick?
Okay. No.
Okay.
I move adjournment.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting is adjourned.
Hey, Luke, would it be helpful if we got you a table back there, man? You look like you're hunkered down over that.
He can sit there.
Well, no, I mean, I understand that Loris has kind of staked her claim to that spot, but, I mean, would a little table like that be helpful at all?
You know, don't worry about it.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you.
The editor's office has one.
Yeah, it's not that that big a deal.
They take it when they have voting.
Yeah, yeah, well,